This is Kindergarten Cop, and this is Friday, April 10th, 2026. I will be reading today from the Decatur Herald and Review. And to start out, I will read an article titled Serving the Future of Care by Joseph Ressler, Herald and Review. HSHS St. Mary's Hospital giveth, and it also taketh away. A big slice of the giving side, part of a rolling $90 million upgrade project, was on glittering display Wednesday with a public reveal of the Lakeside Hospital's state-of-the-art Center for Advanced Surgery. Key features are four spacious 700-square-foot surgery suites bristling with advanced robotics and imaging technology. Other striking developments after several years of reconstructive surgery include a sterile processing department next to the surgery suites, so there is a seamless flow of support and equipment for even the most complex of operations. Future changes will see the hospital chapel exodus to an area of the main lobby with all its pretty original stained glass traveling right along with it. Other remodeling work will involve various departments moving around to set up a more efficient healthcare environment. The helicopter pad has already migrated next door to the emergency department, for example, and the hospital's power system has been overhauled. Other big changes will see the familiar lakeside-facing front of the hospital surgically removed once new space is complete for the patients housed there. That most noticeable of external changes is scheduled for the first part of 2027. Todd Anderson, HSHS System Construction Manager, was born at St. Mary's and is now overseeing the building's rebirth. "We're moving forward. We're producing a great project," Anderson said. Not all of the old St. Mary's, however, survived to be transfigured into a dazzling healthcare future, illuminated by the lights of a high-tech science. Surgery Center Tours. HSHS St. Mary's Hospital invites community members to an open house to celebrate its new Center for Advanced Surgery from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. Saturday, April 11th, on the second floor of the hospital in the Surgery Family Lounge. Attendees can take guided tours of the new surgical suites, explore the latest technology in robotics, view educational displays about the future of healthcare in Decatur, and meet members of the clinical team. The taketh away part of prepping the 148-year-old hospital for tomorrow has seen the reduction of medical surgical beds from 88 down to 30 and intensive care beds sliced from 14 to 6. Also no longer with us are the hospital's inpatient rehabilitation facility, the obstetrics and newborn nursery, once home to Anderson, and pediatrics and inpatient behavioral health services didn't make it either. Timothy Lehman, the hospital's president and chief administrative officer, says triaging the shape of care for a challenging future means making some hard decisions. "Just like anything else in business, you've got to make adjustments to remain healthy," he said. "We do a lot of things well, and it's our job to put those things in front of the public. And while we want to be able to offer amazing services here, yet you can't offer everything as a business. Sometimes you have to consolidate." Lehman said the hospital had to position itself to offer better care, like advanced surgeries, the community wants, and that will also produce an income stream that enables the hospital to not just survive, but thrive. "You've got to continue to make the hospital a healthy place financially so that you can continue to offer services for the community, and so you can also continue to offer new opportunities and new procedures, new products, and new service lines as we edge and flow towards the future," he added. St. Mary's previous leadership said it had to intervene with radical surgery to the hospital given the demographic prognosis of its host city. For example, Decatur's population is aging, and it's been atrophying at a steady clip. The city's headcount stood at more than 76,000 in 2010 and has bled down to a shade under 69,000 by 2024, a rate of anemia nudging 10%. That kind of decline ranks the city as one of the fastest shrinking in the nation, based on the U.S. Census numbers. It also reshapes the profitability metrics for healthcare at a time when the hospital's corporate parent, Hospital Sisters Health System, has been trying to tie an accounting tourniquet around its own bleed of red ink. Fevered by costs linked to a major cyber attack infection, HSHS reported a $327.6 million net loss in the fiscal year ending June 30, 2024. The balance sheet has staged a remarkable recovery in the first half of fiscal 2026. However, with the healthcare giant achieving an operating income of $2.9 million, according to Becker's Hospital Review, that compares to an operating loss of $6.1 million during the same period in the previous fiscal year. So the prognosis for survival in the healthcare jungle remains tough, but Lehman, addressing visitors from the Decatur Regional Chamber of Commerce who were on hand for ribbon cutting at the Center for Advanced Surgery, said his hospital was remodeling to remain part of Decatur's future. This is more than a construction project. It's a reflection of our deep, enduring commitment to Decatur, a commitment not only to meet today's needs, but to anticipate and serve the needs of tomorrow, he said. We're excited about what lies ahead, grateful for the opportunity to continue growing, evolving, and serving this community in a meaningful way. Decatur City Councilman Dennis Cooper was one of the invited guests curious for a look around at what St. Mary's had wrought, and liked what he saw. And although we may have lost some limited services, I think overall it's going to improve the healthcare services Decatur has, he said. We've got new services with higher technology coming in, and that's a win-win for patients and the city. The HSHS hospital system was founded by nuns who arrived in Illinois from Germany in 1875 to provide healthcare, and a group of them dropped by to tour the new facilities and glimpse what the future of aiding the sick looked like. Sister Rita Mary Brown led a prayer to give thanks for the surgery center. The nun said she was proud that the hospital by the lake still held true to the nun's guiding principle of rendering aid to suffering humanity for his sake. That, she said, has always been our motto. This article is also accompanied by three photos. The first, by Joseph Ressler, shows President and Chief Administrative Officer Timothy Lehman answering questions during a tour of an operating room in the new Center for Advanced Surgery at HSHS St. Mary's Hospital in Decatur on Wednesday, April 8th. The second shows Jerry Munoz, Mike Munoz, and Blair Moran watching the demonstration of a Da Vinci surgical robot during a tour of the new Center for Advanced Surgery at HSHS St. Mary's Hospital in Decatur on Wednesday, April 8th. And the third shows David Schrock, Jordan Carson, and J.C. Starbody of the Decatur Regional Chamber of Commerce watching the demonstration of a Da Vinci surgical robot in the new Center for Advanced Surgery at HSHS St. Mary's Hospital in Decatur on Wednesday, April 8th. Next, I move on to an article titled "Tomorrow is Never Promised. Heart Donor's Legacy is Going Beyond Words" by Donette Beckett. 4 years ago, Brian Willem was ready to bargain with God. "We received that phone call no parent wants to receive," he said. "It was like a gut punch." Willem's son, Zach, was severely injured in a car accident in the summer of 2022. The hospital staff told them their son, a 27-year-old Archer Daniels Midland Company chemist, was brain dead. Shortly after his parents were given the news, they made the decision to donate his organs, but they didn't make the decision alone. Zach spoke with his father about the option of organ donation after he received his driver's license years before. The Bright Side highlights uplifting moments across our community. Visit our website to read more and share your ideas. The Bright Side, where good news lives. Zach always had a willingness to give to others. Therefore, his decision to become an organ donor was no surprise to us, his father said. And Gift of Hope has always been with us, every step of the way. Willem is now a volunteer ambassador for Gift of Hope Organ and Tissue Donor Network. He visits other organizations encouraging organ donation registrations. He said one of his favorite speaking events is with drivers' education programs. They really pay attention, Willem said. They care about what I'm speaking about. April is National Donate Life Month. Decatur Memorial Hospital staff, along with Willem, other donor families, and community members met near the hospital's flagpole near the visitor's entrance. The group honored organ and tissue donors and recipients while the purple Gift of Hope flag was raised under the United States and Illinois state flags. The flag is a beacon of hope for families that, in their time of deepest heartbreak, have the strength and courage, generosity, and kindness to choose life by donating organ and tissue for the benefit of complete strangers, said Diana Maupin, donation liaison for Memorial Health. It is a reminder that despair does not win. According to the Gift of Hope statistics, a new person is added to the national transplant waiting list every 7 seconds. DMH has had 2 organ donors since the beginning of the year. The hospital had 33 tissue donors last year, with 533 tissues recovered for heart valves, bone, tendons, veins, and skin for burn victims. During the past decade, nearly 300 tissue donors have participated and more than 4,000 tissues have been recovered. Being an organ and tissue donor is a way to leave a lasting legacy, as well as to save and enhance the lives of people you don't even know, said Tanya Andrix, Decatur Memorial Hospital president. A terrible, terrible loss for one becomes a gift for others. Willem recommends families have the discussion about organ donations while their loved ones are still alive and healthy, because tomorrow is never promised, he said. Zach's donation has connected the Willem family to others in 6 states and in South Korea. Knowing the number of lives that Zach saved by his donations has helped the family find the good in this tragedy, Willem said. Knowing your loved one saved someone, it will make a difference. The family has been in contact with 3 recipients. In a few weeks, they will meet the 16-year-old boy who received Zach's heart. It's going to be emotional, Willem said. Just to hear Zach's heartbeat in someone else is just going to be beyond words. To learn more about organ and tissue donor registration, visit the Gift of Hope Organ and Tissue Donor Network website. The next article is titled, Data's Important, But People Come First. State lawmakers begin days of deep dives on development impacts, by Nicole Hertek of Capital News, Illinois. Illinois lawmakers are digging deep on data centers, with a House committee hearing from mayors, labor groups, and agriculture representatives about the facility's local impacts in the first of 3 planned meetings. Representative Ann Williams, Democrat, Chicago, the chair of the House Executive Committee, said she wanted to hear about the benefits and challenges of data centers as the General Assembly considers regulations like the Power Act. Whatever we do here, we have to put people first, she said. We have to put communities first. Data is important, business is important, revenues are important, but people must come first. Water use, energy use, noise, and how community benefit agreements are constructed were the primary concerns lawmakers wanted to address on Wednesday. Generally, the speakers acknowledge data centers are part of a growing economy and are needed to support technology like AI, cloud computing, and data storage used by various industries, from education to healthcare. Some cautioned against regulation, saying it could dissuade companies from investing in Illinois, while others aired different concerns they've encountered. An Illinois Senate committee has two data center-related hearings scheduled for later this week as well. Environmental advocates on Wednesday also lobbied in the Capitol for data center regulation. Local government perspective. Mayors from Aurora and DeKalb offered competing views of the benefits and trade-offs data centers bring. DeKalb Mayor Cohen Barnes praised the Meta data center that started construction in 2020 and was finished in 2023. When Meta first came to our community, they specifically said they want to make a significant impact in everything they do where they have a physical presence, and that's just what they did, Barnes said. Meta, he says, has invested heavily in DeKalb by contributing to the nonprofit community and paying tens of millions of dollars in property and utility taxes, helping to fund schools and police and local police. It has also partnered with Northern Illinois University to bring STEM classes to area high schools. According to the Rockford Register-Star, the Meta facility's 2024 tax bill was $32.1 million, or 11% of the total $287.3 million in taxes generated in all of DeKalb County. Barnes said DeKalb didn't require Meta to meet any standards or requirements before construction began, and he said he worries that requirements might drive further development away. I would encourage you, let's always think about how we can foster more economic development rather than inhibiting it with regulation and rules and requirements. And if we do that, then we do it for every industry in the state of Illinois, he said. Aurora Mayor John Leish, on the other hand, said residents have raised concerns about noise from data centers and the impact on the power grid. Residents living near data centers have described a constant low-frequency hum day and night, he said. It's not loud in a traditional sense, but persistent. People have described trouble sleeping, increased stress, loss of quiet in their own homes. Aurora currently has 5 data centers in operation and 5 more under construction. In March, Aurora enacted ordinances that would require data center developers to conduct and submit studies dealing with noise, water consumption, and energy needs. The ordinances also require future data centers to meet standards for noise, vibrations, water use, and energy use. They will also need to get power from renewable energy sources. Leish said, while the city has tried to address the issues locally, he urged the state to take broader action. Water and energy in particular need to be addressed regionally or at the state level, he said. Those requirements mimic provisions in the Power Act, a major data center regulation bill now under consideration in both chambers of the General Assembly. Sangamon County on Tuesday approved the zoning proposal for a Cyrus One data center project, and Mark Ayers, a former member of the Sangamon County Board who resigned after Tuesday's vote, said residents also aired worries about noise and water at those meetings. Ayers, who voted against the proposal, said he was happy to see the $500 million investment in Sangamon County, but he wanted to have more discussions before approving the project. He said he also wanted more information from companies about their hiring practices for construction and for long-term operations. And he wanted transparency about a community benefit agreement between the data center and a local development group, especially considering the company also owns the data centers in Aurora. Rather than fixing the noise in Aurora, they're expanding with a bigger project in Sangamon County, he said. So this aspect of being a good neighbor, we're torn with that because they're really not being a good neighbor right now in Aurora. Labor perspective. Representatives from labor were generally opposed to regulations. They said too many rules would risk companies choosing to do business elsewhere. The fact of the matter is data centers are going to be built. They are being built. The question is whether Illinois is ready to build them here, said Mark Poulos, the executive director of Indiana, Illinois, Iowa Foundation for Fair Contracting and a member of Local 150. Poulos said there's high demand for labor to work on these long-term construction projects in surrounding states, including hundreds of his own members. Without smart standards, he said, Illinois could lose out on that investment. Joe Duffy with Climate Jobs Illinois said finding a line between economic development and environmental protections should be the priority, but pausing perks like the data center tax credits, as Governor J.B. Pritzker has proposed, is the wrong approach. We believe Illinois can maintain its lead in this race with the right balance of incentives, labor standards, local protections, and infrastructure planning, Duffy said. We can attract investment while ensuring communities benefit workers are treated fairly, and our energy and water resources are responsibly managed. Land use. Farmers are most concerned about how data centers use land and water, said Bill Bodine of the Illinois Farm Bureau. He said farmers support bring-your-own-energy proposals, but want reassurance that new renewable energy sources aren't developed on land that could be used for farming. Those proposals should prioritize projects that place renewable energy on, say, center rooftops, parking areas, land already impacted by data center development, he said. He also called for water use reports and water withdrawals plan that are reviewed by the Illinois State Water Survey, as well as efficiency standards for energy and water use. Bodine said farmers are also concerned about data centers being abandoned if their technology becomes obsolete or they reach the end of their lifespan. He asked for a decommissioning plan or process so the facilities could be removed easily. We don't want it to turn into a dangerous situation or an eyesore, he said. Next, an article titled Vehicle Speed Limiters Weighed, Lawmaker's Eye, an Alternative Penalty for Reckless Driving, by Ben Zielinski, Capital News, Illinois. Illinois drivers who have their license suspended for speeding or reckless driving violations could have an alternative under legislation being considered in the State House. Representative Marty Duder, Democrat of Elmhurst, is pushing a bill that would allow drivers to have a speed control device installed in their car rather than having their license suspended. Speeding is a chronic problem on our streets and is a threat to public safety, Duder told a House committee last month. Speeding is a factor in nearly half of all deadly crashes. Risk of fatality increases as speed increases. Under House Bill 4948, drivers who have their license suspended following two infractions within 12 months for either reckless driving or speeding 26 miles per hour or more over the speed limit would qualify to apply for a permit with the Secretary of State's office to join the program. If approved, they'd have to pay a $30 monthly fee to have the device installed in their car. Drivers would be required to use the device for 1 year after their first suspension, 2 years after their second suspension, and 3 years after three or more suspensions. Participants would still be subject to some prohibitions, however, such as driving a commercial vehicle or school bus. We know that the primary penalty for extreme or repeat speeders, which is license suspension or revocation, doesn't work, Duder said. Data indicates that about 75% of the people whose licenses are suspended continue to drive. The bill was approved unanimously by the committee, but is still being negotiated before getting a full vote in the chamber. How the device works. The device is programmed to know the road's speed limit and prevents the vehicle from driving any faster than that, no matter how hard the driver presses the gas pedal. It is similar to ignition interlock devices that people convicted of drunk driving must blow in to start their car. Drivers that shut the devices off or tamper with them could be charged with a Class A misdemeanor. Mike Mahana, Vice President of LifeSafer, a company that provides interlock and speed control devices, said the program allows people to continue their daily routines. He said the devices also come with an override button that can allow drivers to temporarily go faster if needed. It is configurable to let them go for a certain period of seconds over the speed limit, Mahana told Capital News Illinois. We control that by how many miles per hour they go over the speed limit and for how long they can use it for. It is meant for people that need to pass a vehicle, maybe go up a hill, passing a truck. Representative Will Guzzardi, Democrat Chicago, was among the lawmakers who participated in LifeSafer's demonstration of the technology outside the State House on Wednesday. It feels very natural, and it also feels really safe, Guzzardi told Capital News Illinois. You, as a driver, you don't notice it after a couple of minutes. You're driving normally. Guzzardi said that once he hit the 30-mile-per-hour speed limit on Springfield streets, he didn't notice any difference in how the car handled. I think this really reinforced for me that this technology works and it's safe and it's easy, he said. If we can make drivers safer on the road and help them avoid collateral consequences involving the criminal justice system, I think that's a win. Virginia, Washington, and Washington, D.C. are the only jurisdictions that have the program, according to the National Conference of State Legislators. This article comes with a photo by Ben Zielinski of Capital News Illinois that shows a LifeSafer intelligent speed assistance device installed in a vehicle. Looking at obituaries, Joyce Brazio. Joyce Darlene Waybright Brazio, 86, passed away on Thursday, April 2, 2026, in Decatur, Illinois. The family of Joyce Brazio will receive friends from 5 to 7 p.m. on Thursday, April 9, 2026, at Moran and Goble Funeral Home. Funeral service will take place at 11 a.m. the following day, April 10, 2026, with burial to follow in Graceland Cemetery. Arrangements are being handled by Moran and Goble Funeral Home, 2801 North Monroe Street, Decatur 62526, and their phone is 217-875-2004.